You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, let's get this hootenanny rocking. Good morning to Ed Alexander.
Good morning, Christy Simon.
Good morning to all of you. You're at 10:30 The Voice, local news and pork.
Welcome, wakies.
Pork. I had to say I was talking to Jackie this morning, and I had to say the word, it hit me, we're talking about the word feudalism. I had to say it in my New York accent.
Ooh.
Yeah, feudalism. How you doing?
Feudalism. Even.
Anti-Italian discrimination, as we like to say. I didn't see any news stories. Did they actually kill Christopher Columbus Park on
nobody's reporting anything. Do you have any idea what the city council or the supervisors did? You can look all over. There's no reporters left, people.
We do have to play that.
They don't send out a release. You don't know.
We do got to play that Channel 4 spot about the TPOA sent a request to the council about censuring Lane Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
For a mild assault on a police officer during a protest.
Yeah.
We should play that today. I think we're going to play that.
Good.
Today. So we're going to do that.
Somebody should. Good idea.
So we got to do that.
That's what you're here for.
Let's see. We did, today.
I don't know.
Is today today?
It's the 21st. You think this election should be over by now.
That's right.
You
think it's Thursday. Holy cow.
Should be Halloween.
All right. We got a big shoe today. Calling up in next segment, Ed, that we did add one on you. It's Mercedes Schlapp.
What?
Latinos for Trump.
Savings.
Schlapp. She married a guy named Schlapp. We'll have to ask about that. And then the Undersecretary for the Veterans Administration, yes, Dr. Paul Lawrence, will be here at the bottom of the hour. Mark Finchem, who, of course, is in LD11. He's running for re-election in the Arizona House. He actually hasn't been on in a long time, so we'll see him at 7:10. Third hour with Dr. King. Chris King was going to stop by. He actually did the Pledge of Allegiance at the event on Monday.
Really?
Yep.
Excellent.
Wearing a suit and his red tie, looking sharp.
Sweet.
And then Secretary of the Interior of the United States of America, David Bernhardt.
Damn.
So that's going on today.
Got a lot of those Washington types and secretary things, and gosh.
And then tomorrow we did finally rebook her. She's moved on us twice.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Jeanine from Fox News is tomorrow at 7:30. So we got that going for us. And then I see Friday, the Copper Brothel Brewery.
Yes. You should be there.
And Antonori on the same show.
All right.
So that'll be good. And then Movies with Mark and Snezek on Friday. So that'll be good. So let's talk first and we got so much stuff to talk about today. Let me give you the quick rundown. Let's do the old. Here's the rundown.
Okay.
We have the residents of Minneapolis suing the city for lack of police.
Yeah.
We got that going for us.
That would be defunding. Thank you. Idiots.
We have, let's see what else we got. Oh, I'm going to read you the press release. Oh, my Lord. Stop with your autoplay. No one cares.
No, they don't.
Okay. Then we have, I'm going to read you the Sun Corridor press release about the guy with the 50 jobs downtown.
Oh, okay.
And we'll talk about how it's a nice story, but it's a story we've seen before. Okay. So we got that going for us. We have the AP poll on American trust on COVID-19 information coming from, quote, the experts.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do that today.
Liberal media.
We're going to give you some of the a story that's nowhere near the Arizona Daily Star, but it's in the Republic where I have to tell. They're going to tell you how many COVID cases the U of A is reporting. Because it definitely was not in the Star. Because you know what it doesn't do in the Star? Feed the narrative.
Mm.
We have an arrest in the guy who, and remember, this is on 12th and Ajo.
Six months ago.
And this is what happens in a town that a Raheena Romero defunds police on 11 out of 12 votes since she's been on the council. The 77-year-old woman who got hit by a lead pipe so the guy could steal her pizza is walking out the front door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got that going for us. We are going to talk about, let's see what else we got here today. These new health risks. Doug Ducey and Kara Crist have new COVID-19 rules for dining out, karaoke, and bowling.
Good grief.
Good grief indeed.
How deep.
I'm so glad you said that. Everyone also learned to make 2020 the worst thing possible is that Apple TV bought the rights to all the Charlie Brown holiday specials.
So screw you.
So for the first time in 50 years... there will be no Charlie Brown, Great Pumpkin, or Christmas on regular TV.
You'll have to pay for it. Hey!
So when I bought...
Because Disney doesn't own it yet, but Disney will buy that soon. Don't worry. From Apple. They'll buy Apple.
So over. Anyway. When Chris bought the Charlie Brown holiday collection so many years ago, genius. And my last thing we're going to talk about today, because we're going to go to break, because Mercedes is going to call you up soon.
Good.
Is Ed? We all got this. Now, Ed and I are two different registrations. I'm an R and he's an I, okay? Mm-hmm. So this went out to almost everybody. It's this thing about getting Judge Barrett confirmed. And it's the sexiest male piece we've ever seen, Ed.
It's amazing. It's see-through plastic. This was one for the ages.
So we're going to talk about this, and maybe this was wasted money, is what I'm going. That will be my take.
Yeah, since we're already going to vote, and we know what the vote's going to be.
Right, and this is an expensive piece. So hold on, we got. We're going to find out who Mr. Schlapp is here. Bruce just sent me. Matt Schlapp runs American Conservative Union. Ah, the Matt Schlapp, and also. Paul Ash Management, Bruce's company, is sponsoring our live remote on election night. Ed, we're moving.
Excellent.
So we're going to do the remote at the St. Philip's Plaza where the GOP is doing their party. So me and Joe and everyone will be together. So while Ray's stuck here in the studio by himself, we'll be eating food and possibly a beer from Grant Kruger's great restaurants.
That'll be a zoo.
Why not?
Yep.
Why the hell not? The last how many last so many months has been a zoo?
Yeah.
Let's keep rocking. Right? 6:13 in the morning. Mercedes Schlapp, Latinos for Trump, coming up next. VA secretary. After that, wake up Tucson. 10:30. The Voice.
I woke up this morning. They said Spencer Davis died. I'm from the Spencer Davis group.
I mean, I told Ed I didn't know he was alive. Thank you for the music, Spencer.
So this is Steve Winwood doing singing and the vocals. I don't know where Spencer hung in on this jazz, but it was his group. So there you go.
6:20 in the morning. We got to get to it. Busy Tuesday here. Let's go. Or Wednesday. I knew it was Wednesday. Let's go right to the phones from the Trump campaign. Mercedes Schlapp. Good morning, Mercedes.
Good morning.
So, Mercedes, you're a second-generation Cuban-American, and, you know, I'm always fascinated here in southern Arizona. We were just at the rally that the president had Monday, and I saw a lot of Latinos for Trump running around.
Yes, you know, it's interesting. When I visited Arizona, we were in the Women for Trump bus tour. We stopped by Latinos for Trump, a field office, and, you know, I really got to speak to a lot of the Latinos in the community. And one of the things that was interesting is that many of them are not even Republicans. They were either Democrats or independents. They said, you know, I never voted Republican, but because of President Trump and what he's been able to do to build a strong economy, to be a champion for school choice, to protect, you know, our faith and fight for religious freedoms. And they've seen that the Democrat Party had just shifted so far left. I mean, when you have Joe Biden picking the vice presidential candidate, the most liberal senator in the Senate, it just shows that the party has just gone off the rails. So I really have, as I've met more Latinos, we're seeing that the Democrats have really taken these voters for granted, and that President Trump has found a way to talk to them directly and say, look, I'm going to be fighting for you. I'm going to be fighting for your family. we want your family to have better opportunities now than ever before. And he's done it once, building the strongest economy, and he's going to do it again as we get through this global pandemic together.
So we're talking to Mercedes Schlapp. 790-2040 is a phone number if you have a call. Mercedes, I'm looking at the numbers from Rona McDaniel on the two Arizona events, and it's always fascinating to see on the signups, but more importantly that at the Prescott rally, 24% of them not Republican, 37% of them did not vote 4 years ago, and then in Tucson, it was 28% not Republican and 28% did not vote in 2016. What are we learning about those people?
Look, I've been in politics for a long time, and I have never seen the huge enthusiasm for a candidate, for a presidential candidate, like we've seen with President Donald Trump. He's brought out people that have never been in politics, have never been involved in politics before, where they've actually, as we use the expression, they're woke. They've really realized that they need to partake in this political process and make sure the president gets reelected, because they're very concerned about the direction that the Democrats are going, and these liberal Democrats. And at the end of the day, they see that President Trump is one of them. It's like he understands the policies that work, common sense policies and solutions that work to build a strong America and a safe America. And so I think that's really resonating. And then what we're seeing on the voter registration side is that we've been able to register more voters in the last 7 weeks than we ever did in 2016. So it's these people who have never voted before, but they support the president and they really understand what's at stake. And it's why I think what you're going to start seeing is that the pollsters are not capturing these new voters. And so we are going to see, as we continue to see the polls tighten up, the president winning states like Arizona that are important for our electoral map.
Explain what the Trump campaign's done in the last 3-4 years directly through email marketing, I believe, through email communications, kind of getting the base going. Like here in Tucson, where Tucson's a liberal petri dish inside a purplish state right now, right? And yes. I never knew you could max out precinct committee people in a section because we're Republicans down here. We never get enough PCs. Then all of a sudden, there's this huge wave of PCs that come through. And it's really because the Trump campaign's done this amazing job really going past the party apparatus and saying, we need you to do this. Talk about that, yeah, that connection.
We started investing in our ground game very early on. We've been working with state parties, ensuring that we had field officers in place, as well as developing and coming up with these community centers, Black Voices, Latinos for Trump, in some of these critical markets. And then the point here is also that we've been able to recruit 2.5 million volunteers. That's more volunteers than Obama ever had during his election cycle. And many of them are just showing up. And they're like, I want to help out. What do I need to do to get the president elected? And so we have hit over 100 million voter contacts since the last cycle. That's very significant because we're knocking on doors. We're making phone calls. I have a dear friend of mine who works in Phoenix, Arizona. He helps run the field office. And he told me the last time I checked with him, he himself alone knocked on 5,000 doors. So it's what you're seeing is an army for Trump that is strong, that is present, that is making a difference and really reaching these voters to say, look, we care about you. You know, your issues are our issues. We want to make sure we build a strong and safe country. We want to make sure that we protect our religious liberties, that we protect the Second Amendment, that we ensure that we are the voice of the unborn, which is exactly what President Trump stands for. And more so again that we build a strong economy, which the president did in his first 47 months in office. And to contrast that with a Joe Biden who's been in office for 47 years, and I don't know about you, but I don't think hardly any accomplishments he's had in 47 years other than ensure that our jobs are offshore to China and that he basically supports outdated trade deals.
I want to run out of time on this question. So our brothers and sisters on the other side of the aisle, because the president wants to actually secure a border, of course say that he's racist and he hates Latinos and everything like this. Talk about how his message actually probably, it's going to surprise some of the D's listening to this show, actually resonates very well with the Latino community.
You know, I'll tell you, and I work in the White House.
And what are those issues? What are those specific issues that he hits with
them? So, for the first 2 years, the focus for the president, you know, and I was in the White House during that time, is we saw a lot of chaos at the border. And the way to really talk to people and educate people about the border is that at the end of the day, the people who are benefiting at the border when they're creating this chaos are the drug cartels and the human traffickers. And we've seen time and time again that women that are trying to leave their countries to come to the United States and cross the border, 1 in 3 are sexually assaulted on their journey towards the border. So we believe in a legal immigration system. We believe that people need to apply legally, that we can't have this chaos on the border. It's because we've had these broken immigration laws that, quite frankly, the Democrats never, ever in good faith have tried to work with us to solve this issue and really come up with a comprehensive immigration reform package, which is something that the administration has pushed time and time again in solving the issue of DACA and ensuring that we have more funds for securing the border. Border security is critical. It is critical for every nation because the last thing that you need are for terrorists to come through the border, for the criminals to come through the border, and for drugs to come through the border. And so that is why we really feel strongly that you have to ensure that we have a secure border in addition to ensuring that you stop criminal activity, which we've seen time and time again.
When we've seen such low unemployment amongst the Latino Americans, and also the job creation, the business creation numbers in the Latino community, do they get it? Does that community get it that the president's policies help them get there?
I do believe that that's a critical component of it. I mean, we've seen under President Trump the lowest unemployment numbers for Latinos. We've seen the fact that their medium income has gone up, that poverty rate has been reduced under President Trump. And it's because he knows how to create jobs. This isn't opposed to Joe Biden, who's proposing a $4 trillion tax burden on American families, who has time and time supported failed trade deals that basically helped other countries like China, not American workers. And at the end of the day, Biden supports the Green New Deal, which we know would cost millions of jobs and destroy millions of jobs in the energy sector. You don't even get a straight answer from Joe Biden, whether it be on the issue of pork packing, where he says, the American people don't deserve to know if we would pack the Supreme Court, he won't share. You just don't know. He constantly is changing his position. He's not transparent. He's corrupt, as we know. There's evidence that's growing on the fact that Hunter Biden basically requested a meeting with his father and a Burisma executive from Ukraine, which would be illegal and wrong. And so we still have yet for Joe Biden to really answer that question.
All right, we got to get going. Mercedes, thanks for the good conversation.
Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon. We got the VA Undersecretary, Dr. Paul Lawrence, coming up next. 6:35 in the morning. Let's go right to the phones. We have VA Undersecretary Dr. Paul Lawrence on the phone. Paul, what's going on, sir?
Hey, good morning. Good to be with you all. You know, here at the Veterans Administration, we're just worried about our veterans. We appreciate your concern as well.
Well, if you can't be concerned about veterans, you know, why are we even talking, as we like to say? Give me a little update. Give me what's going on right now in the Veterans Administration, because it's been so rocky over the last several years. And, you know, we had our issues in Arizona. Tucson seems to be doing very well by its veterans, but, you know, the VA hospital in Paradise Valley had its issues and different things like that. What's happened in the last 2 or 3 years to make things better for our vets?
Well, that's pretty clear. President Trump put the veterans at the center of his administration. And so what he's done is secure the largest budget for 3 years in a row that we've ever had. And with that comes a series of things. He got laws to improve the appeals process, to make the GI Bill forever, the Mission Act to give veterans choice, and in a series of things like that. And, of course, accountability, which he talks about all the time, so we can exit non-performers. So what you see is exactly what's taking place. Our trust scores are up. access to health care is as good or better than the private sector. And here at the Veterans Benefits Administration, we are processing veterans' claims for benefits faster than ever before. So a lot's gone on, but it's mostly, as a result of the president, letting it be known what he wants us to do and us delivering on that promise.
Now, how about, sometimes there's, of course, there can't be a VA in every place, especially in some rural areas of America. What does that look like for the vet that lives in a more rural area that can't drive 2 hours to a VA hospital? How do you guys deal with that now?
All right. So there's a couple things. The Mission Act I just alluded to allows veterans to get care in the community. So, you would interact with VA and you would be given some choices. Say, well, you can come here 2 hours away in your example, or you can get it in the community, or even if you're closer, if the commute time is too long or a specialty isn't available, you have options in that way. The other thing we're doing a lot since the pandemic is telemedicine. We've done exponentially more than we did pre-pandemic, and that's being very well received. But as you know, not everything can be done via a phone or a computer. So again, the access to community care is something that's really different.
You have telemedicine with your own doctors, right? With the VA doctors, and not doing that with other doctors, correct?
It could be with other doctors too. That's right. But a lot of it's with VA. The statistics I alluded to were with VA doctors.
What is the usage of VA facilities, or what's the trend in the amount of people using the facilities? Is it growing? Is it flat? As we hit a baby boom curve here, I assume it goes down, but you tell me.
It's growing, actually. We did, I believe the number is 6 million more appointments last year than the year before. So we like to believe that, yes, people more aware. Don't forget, there are 21 million veterans with us still. Only about 9 million are enrolled in our system. So we think there's a lot of folks who, we want to welcome back to the VA because of the changes that have been made.
Let's talk about a big problem, of course, that seems to be growing is what happens to our vets right after they come out of the service with high veteran suicide rates. What's the VA doing to try to mitigate the problems there?
Right. So one of the things we've done, well, first we want our veterans to know, even before they become veterans, about, connecting with VA once they leave the military. We think the connectivity is very important. One of the programs we started, again, in response to an executive order from the president, is called Solid Start, where we call new veterans in the first year three times. Once they leave the military, we call them three times and talk to them about their benefits and services from VA. We answer their questions. We don't talk at them. And we follow up with emails with resources. So this has proven very, very popular. And we think that's the one way to sort of start the connectivity. The other is just general outreach and let folks know we are here, right? I mean, you can imagine, you've just left the military, the world's strongest team. We want to welcome you to the world's strongest community of U.S. veterans, and that's what VA is here to help do.
Now, would you guys also assist the veterans in relation to job placement after that? Does that come under you guys?
No, actually, that's the Department of Labor, but we do a lot with them, and we facilitate a lot of that by helping veterans deal with the transition, and we connect with Department of Labor on employment opportunities. But don't forget, things like the GI Bill or something we call Veterans Readiness and Employment help get folks job ready, so we help them in that way. So it's a good partnership with the Department of Labor.
So as a guy who's tried to hire veterans over the last few years with various companies, there's a problem that you guys are running into, and maybe you're aware of it and maybe you're not. So I had a local company they were actively looking for veterans. They want that kind of person that has the training and the credentials to do the job. And it was paying well, full benefits, everything. So we worked with the state of Arizona on their everyone's got a hire veterans program out there.
Right, right.
And you know what the scary part was, Dr. Paul Lawrence, was when I sat down with the owner and we had to fill out the first 12 pages of disclosures and liability stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
This person's been under stressful things. They could, they could snap, all this crazy crap, right? This guy's like, he had to push the paperwork away and go, I can't do this. What are they doing? And so he had about 10 jobs to fill that he would have gave, but once he did the paperwork. So how do we fix that problem? I mean, It's kind of the idea that you guys say, oh, we're giving you a ticking time bomb, is what the paperwork said. And that's not true, but I know you have lawyers that screw things up. So tell me, how do we make that better?
Well, certainly what I want to do, Chris, is offline, learn about who you interacted with the state of Arizona so we can help work with them, because we completely agree with you. The narrative needs to change. The narrative of the broken veteran is simply not true. Right, and it's unfortunate your company was not able, the company you're working with was not able to hire veterans because, as you know, so many companies talk about veterans being their top employees for all the reasons: loyalty, teamwork, experience in management situations, and you know, ambiguity and stress. So I'd like to learn more about that offline so we can see what we do. But we're completely behind that, and again, we get lots of calls from companies trying to figure out how they hire veterans for all the reasons you were describing.
It was a big problem also that came up with when Senator McSally was passing legislation to fast-track the hiring of veterans to work with Customs Border Protection and Border Patrol, because she gave out some ridiculous number. I have to assume it's true that, you know, it was taking like 18 months to hire a veteran over at Customs and Border.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit of a different issue, Chris. So the federal government has hiring rules that sounds like Senator McSally was trying to deal with. Here at the VA, we encountered the same rules. In the pandemic, in the law President Trump signed, we got what's called direct hiring authority, so we could jump over those rules. And so we were very lucky. I don't know how far it extended, but that is a sort of a, you know, that is an issue in the federal government, right? Veterans get some preference, but not immediate preference over certain other candidates. So I think that's what she was trying to address.
And then my last question for you, if you guys get another 4 years, if the president gets reelected, what are one or two things that you want to tackle that you haven't tackled yet?
Certainly. So for Veterans Benefits Administration, we know our veterans want their benefits faster. So that's what we'll continue to work on. We know that's what they want. Over broadly at the VA, we are finishing implementing the electronic health record, and this will make, you know, access to health care for our veterans so much better. So those are two things, and those are two promises, you know, that were made early on and that we're going to continue to deliver for our veterans.
And, Paul, what's the VA website if someone needs help with any of these things we're talking about?
Certainly. You can always go to va.gov, and if you have questions about your benefits, you can call us at 1-800-827-1000.
Awesome. All right. Dr. Paul Lawrence, thanks for the discussion today, and get back to work, as they say. We pay your salary. Get back to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think about that every day, Chris. Really appreciate it. We'll follow up, see what we can do with the state of Arizona to help them hire more veterans. So thank you very much, Chris.
All right, Paul. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, Ed's going to play you a KVOA story about the cops asking for an apology or censoring of Lane Santa Cruz, and you may not be surprised by the answer from the city council. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Welcome to the zoo. 6:51 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Ed Alexander, Christy Simone, and your fine selves listening here at 10:30 The Voice. All right, we're going to run out of time, so we got to go right to Alexis Burdine, who probably will start off her story on Channel 4, 88 feet from everyone, but still wearing her stupid mask. Let's go, Alexis.
Police Officers Association says
overall,
that is what it's waiting for after
overall
a story we brought you in August. The association is asking
overall
city leaders to censure City Councilwoman Lane Santa Cruz, yeah, after a local protest where that councilwoman is seen on police body cam video with her hand on an officer's baton. The union's request has gone unanswered. Alexis Burdine asked city leaders
what
why
got, Ed,
in this live News 4 Tucson investigation.
Overall,
Alexis.
Black mass matter.
Acknowledgement that it's unacceptable to put your hand on an officer's weapon. That's what TPOA says officers want. Arizona law says it's illegal. So why haven't city leaders issued a sanction?
Hate cops.
The men and women of the Tucson Police Officers Association are a little disappointed in our city leaders for not even having the time to reach out and tell us why they wouldn't look into the conduct of one of their own.
The union sent this letter referencing our News 4 Tucson investigators report, saying in part, The video clearly shows Santa Cruz placing her hands on an officer's baton and forcibly moving it. This action alone meets the standard of aggravated assault and is classified as a Class 5 felony. TPOA asked city leaders to censure City Councilwoman Lane Santa Cruz, saying her action clearly violates the council's established code of ethics. The union sent the letter 59 days ago.
As of yet, the Tucson Police Officers Association has not received
this is Tony, the head of the union.
Correspondence from any of the city council members or the mayor reference our request.
What kind of message does this send from the council and the mayor to officers and your constituents who support police?
There's no question that I've got TPOA's back.
Yeah.
Generally. Let's let it go. Let's move on. We don't need to keep escalating things. This happened, a month and a half ago?
Take care of business, damn it.
TPOA wants city leaders to acknowledge this is wrong. Why won't they do that?
I don't think Lane was right in being down and being in the middle of that protest. She was equally not right in escalating the tension between the police and her that evening. But my sense is that we don't gain anything as a community, and we don't gain anything in our relationship with the police department and this mayor and council if we start sanctioning people.
Councilman Paul Cunningham says he stands by his statement in our original report, saying, "I am not supportive of any type of censure for Councilmember Santa Cruz at this time." Loser. Over a month ago, Councilwoman Nikki Lee originally told us in part, "I have a lot of questions that I need to have answered before I can make an informed statement." Weeks passed. We called and emailed, asking if she's ready to make that informed statement. We never heard back. Councilman Paul Durham and Richard Fimbrace never commented on the issue to
invisible.
Begin with.
They're
didn't
invisible.
Respond this time either. Mayor Romero's office declined our interview request, but they did give us this statement. Councilmember Santa Cruz was elected by Tucson voters to represent and serve the constituents of Ward 1, and as their representative, she is accountable to them. Rather than allowing these important issues to divide our community, we must come together and find solutions to these deep, systemic issues in order to move forward and begin the healing process.
Come on, like she's never divided this community.
They should be held to a higher conduct. Just like police officers are.
As for City Councilwoman Santa Cruz, we reached out to her office.
Yeah, well.
We never heard back. Now, several City
She's
Council
living
members
in a
did
shed
point
behind
out
Rahina's
that TPOA
house.
Never called them personally. They say if they did, they would have picked up the phone. Investigating for you, Alexis Spurdine, News 4 Tucson.
Thank you, Alexis. What a bull crap.
That's for Alexis only.
Yes.
And overall, the hair looked good. Now.
What the hell? We don't want to start any division. That's all the city council does.
That's
we got the Paris Accord. We got the da-da-da-da. We got the Trump.
White supremacy.
We are all
white
racist,
supremacy.
But we don't want any division, so we're not going to. What a bunch of crap.
So let's get this. Let's get to Kazacha because we're going out of time. I've always had TPOA's back mostly. Modifier. We just need to let it go and let's heal.
Oh.
We're not going to heal if we just start sanctioning people.
All these do is they attack people.
Okay. 59 days from your police officers asking for some sort of response. The idea that Fimbris didn't respond as a former law enforcement guy is actually super terrific pathetic.
He's useless.
Okay. He's more of the less useless over there, but
no,
this
real
one,
good at ribbon cutting.
This
Come
one
on.
Sucks.
Yeah,
we know Durham sucks. Okay,
he is totally useless. He's not even there.
Now here's the new one. Now this is what we've learned. Now
let's pay him some more.
So Rahina, in her stupid statement that probably wasn't written by her anyway, okay, said that. Now think about it. If you and I were having a encounter with TPD, any police officer, and we put our hand on their stuff. Right. And we know it's a misdemeanor. Right. It's actually breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
OK.
Mm-hmm.
We would be thrown in jail.
Yes. Right on the spot.
So what Rahina is saying is Lane Santa Cruz is above the law.
Yep.
Because she said, oh, she's accountable to the voters of District 1, of Ward 1 and nobody else. So does that mean Lane can go punch somebody in the face, and then when it comes time to pay the piper, you go, oh, she's only responsible to Ward 1?
Yes.
Bullcrap.
That's what it means.
So let's get back to the police officers, the TPOA. You know what you guys are? You're weak. You're weak. You should be pressing charges against Lane Santa Cruz. Do you guys get this? How many more times can they push you around? I mean, I love you guys and girls. Love you. I love doing these TPD things like we did yesterday. There's no bigger supporter than Christy Simone of TPD. But I'm going to tell you something. Go sue the city on this. Go press charges. Go put you're screwed now that Conover's there, okay? But go press the Pima County Attorney's Office to press charges against Lane Santa Cruz. Do you guys get this or not? They're letting her get away with a crime. And what I love about Lane, because she, oh, I'm such a fighter. I'm such a fighter for the people, right? But then when you break the law and the cops say, hey, you can't even respond to them because you're not a fighter. You're not a fighter. You're an ideologue with a big mouth. You're not a fighter for anything. You like to hear your own voice more than I like to hear my own voice. And that's something to say. This is another Uber fail. Think about it. When Winsky was on the show from TPOA, I swear to God, he made my eyes bleed when he said, well, you know, Chris, on the staffing, you know, the city's still responding. You know, we're still suffering from the recession from 12 years ago. And I said, Jason, you got Stockholm syndrome, buddy. Are you crazy? Don't ever tell me again that you have, we're blaming the 08 recession for police staffing. That's insane. Tony Archibald, head of the, go press. I want a public, you want Barbara LaWall's office or Conover, ask them in public, we want you to press charges against, or Rankin, you guys need to press charges against Lane Santa Cruz. Because if you let them ignore them breaking the law, having a city councilwoman assault your own officer, that you're just opening the door for more misery. I'm going to go do some aromatherapy. Wake up.